Welcome, everybody, to a new episode of Back in My Day. My name is Michael R. Power, and once again, I have the power. Our regular host, David Petrangelo, is not going to be here tonight, but I'm lucky enough to be joined by.
Ian Walter.
So, Ian, how's it going?
First of all, it's going great because I've been chilling at the movie theaters all summer
Yes, you
long.
have. If you haven't been following along, Ian has been seeing all the new movies and leaving reviews. On this very podcast, which are doing quite well actually, and so thanks for doing that. That's awesome. But
No worries.
today actually, before we're going to talk about the Secret Invasion Marvel show, that's what the main topic's going to be on this episode. As of today, the first three episodes have come out, so we're going to touch on the first three episodes, how we're feeling on the show as a whole, and make some sort of predictions. And I'm going to make a bit some comparisons to the comic book and the source material that I want to get into with you. Before we do that, let's touch on the summer box office, as you mentioned. So you've been seeing a lot of movies. People that listen to the show know that we have a friendly wager, box office prediction wager game that we do that we liberally stole from the Slash Filmcast, so credit to them. And where we try to predict where the movies in the box office domestically will, or how they will end up. And it's been a very interesting summer. There's been a lot of trash talk in our group chat. It was a fun episode. Go back and listen to that one if you haven't listened. And so before we get into the Secret Invasion, we just want to sort of give an update on where we're sitting now, sort of halfway through the summer with the wager. So I know, Ian, you wanted to talk about it a bit. So what exactly did you want to get into?
All right. Well, I think the first thing to note is that when we first made our picks, I feel like we were really confident in sort of the top tier picks. Like we thought we knew where like one and two were gonna lie and all this stuff. So I'm gonna start off just by giving a quick update on where we're at in the summer and what's on top right now. So Guardians of the Galaxy kicked off our summer mover wager, and that was most of our number one picks. Wife Power took Indiana Jones and the
Indiana
Dial of
Jones.
Destiny as sort of a, an underdog pick there. And as of its opening weekend, it's not looking like that's gonna be anywhere near the top. So we've already kind of said our prayers for White Power's list. But that having been said, I did notice something else when I was looking at all of our picks, and I thought we had written Wife Powers off completely because of her Indiana Jones number one. But of course, that would push her Guardians pick to number two. And when I look at the rankings right now, we have Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 at number one. That's sitting pretty 356, or so we thought. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is climbing rapidly, still in the theaters this summer, and is only 10 mil back at 346. So
Wow, it's probably
346
gonna
mil.
pass
So
that.
it probably will take the number one spot, which means that Wife Power is actually going to get 10 points for her number two pick if Guardians becomes number two, right? So.
Because the thing about her list was her and Dave's list were very similar, except she had Indy one and he had Guardians one. So we figured if Guardians comes first, he's gonna get 13 points. She's only gonna get 7. That's way too much of a difference for her to ever make up because the rest of the lists are pretty similar. But yeah,
If
now,
she
if
nails that number
Spider-Verse
two, she's
gets
going to be the
number
only one with
one,
Guardians at number two,
yeah,
right?
she'll
So,
be the only one getting those 10 points, and Dave won't get the 13. So there you go. That's interesting.
yeah, those are the two clear front runners. We've got Little Mermaid, which is surprising this summer at 283
Merman.
mil. Merman, that's right. There's Wife Power in the background checking up on our smack talk here.
She's hearing
Number
you talk about her
four.
list.
Yeah, that's right.
Her
Number
ears are burning.
four is Fast X, and honestly, I don't think it's going to stay there. It's only 145 mil, so it's like it's a soft four right now. I think there's some other movies that can come in and dethrone Fast X, and then Transformers: Rise of the Beast to round out the top five, and then that they're sitting at 139. So they might squeak into that top 10, which will be interesting because Transformers have been the ones that we thought would flop versus something like Indiana Jones, where we thought it was going to be really strong. So then we've got The Flash, which is probably the biggest flop of the summer, at least not talking profitability wise, just the fact that it's just now crossed the 100 million mark, and we thought it was going to be like in the like Power, you thought it was going to be in the top three. So
I'm the one that put Flash number two like an idiot. I'm kicking myself now because I wish I had the guts. I did have the guts in some of my picks to. Like I was the only one with Turtles in my 10. I'm happy for that. I'm the only one that didn't put Elemental in my list at all, and I think that's going to pan out for me.
Yep,
Pixar is really on a
they could hold on.
downslide, but
They could hold on to the 10 spot.
Flash at
Elemental's
number
at
two,
95 mil.
and
Yeah,
I had
so.
Spider-Verse at number one for a long time. Then I had it at number two for a long time, and then I put in Flash because I wanted to take that big swing, and I thought it was going to be a bat make like a Batman movie amount of
Yeah.
money, and it just
So
totally
that's definitely
flopped.
my biggest regret. So just to finish off the discussion of the actual standings right now, we've got Elemental squeaking in at 7, but of course they're going to probably drop off the list unless they hold on to that 10 spot. I do have them in my dark horses, I think. But then we have, unfortunately, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Only one weekend open, but it's only made 83 mil so far. So yeah, that's sorry for
83
Wife Power, who
mil
had it at
at
number one.
it
Yeah.
made 83 mil domestic in the
Domestic,
weekend.
and it's well, that's including whatever weeknights we've already hit
Oh, because we're
going
on
into weekend
Wednesday.
two.
Yeah, that's not
So,
terrible. I was gonna say 80 was 80's actually not terrible for this summer. It's
you know what? I
respectable
think this
and
one's gonna have more legs than some,
yeah.
but like still at a $300 million budget is a big disappointment for Lucasfilm for sure.
Yeah,
So
whether it's
that's
gonna make its
like,
money back is a different thing. I think it'll make enough to be in the top 10 and maybe even top half of the top
yeah.
10, which
So
would be
that's
good
like
for
a
some of us,
good
but
chunk. That's eight of the films that we have all been talking about for the summer movie wager. So there's still some to come out, but like that's like, you know, more than half the summer's kind of thing of movies there. So we've got eight films there. And then just to kind of look at where we're sitting right now, I'm looking at some of our lists here and just the current standings as it stands on summer movie wager. It's actually brace yourselves. Host
Uh-oh.
Dave is in the lead
Oh no.
with
Don't
Wife
say it.
Power not too far behind. So I mean things can change obviously with the movies that have yet to be released, but it's not a good sign that like both of their lists are so similar that we're gonna really need to make some headway because I think you and I are in the 30s. Like I think you have 35, I have 36, Wife Power has 44, and Dave is in the lead with 47. So it's pretty wild if you ask me.
And the big thing that's gonna help or not help, that's gonna make or break me is going to be that Barbie movie Oppenheimer
Yeah, the big
weekend.
split. Yeah.
And
Because
that's
you
in
had Oppenheimer in at 7, which is quite high. And Davey has Barbie even higher at 4. But we all know, based on the tracking and based on the internet buzz, that Barbie probably will do better
Well,
than
he has Barbie
Oppenheimer.
before. I from the movie where I called that Barbie was going to be a flop and not make the 10. So I still have hope that's going to happen. I think it's going to be a good movie, but I didn't think it was going to make enough money to make the top 10. And
Yeah.
that's sort of been the number one point of trash talk contention in
Yeah.
the group was like whether or not Barbie's going to A, make it, and B, is it going to like destroy Oppenheimer, or
I
is
mean, I'm right
my
there
take
with
going to
you.
happen?
I think in a perfect world, Oppenheimer literally blows Barbie out of the water, but I think we both know that the summer box office has already been really surprising, and we kind of know the trends of the
I'm
movie
being a bit
industry and what's going to
hyperbolic
happen.
in our chat that like that weekend is sort of
The death
gonna
of
be
cinema.
possibly the death of cinema because it's like you have the creator driven, not based on any IP, just Christopher Nolan, one of the biggest filmmakers. A studio gave him a boatload of money to make something that's purely his vision, out of his mind, not based on anything, versus, what seems to be like just a total cash grabbing based on name and IP, the Barbie movie. And so I'm kind of
Yeah.
being hyperbolic saying like it could be the death of cinema, but in a way, it was going to be a big hit to people who cinephiles and people who like original movies. If Barbie does really well and Oppenheimer flops, it'll be harder to get these sort of auteur driven, dramatic adult movies greenlit by studios if Christopher Nolan's can't even make money and can't beat, something as silly as the Barbie movie. So
Yeah.
to me, it's like I'm being hyperbolic in a joking way, but I'm also rooting for Oppenheimer for those reasons. So yeah, we'll
Yeah,
see what
so
happens.
you and I are both. I mean, okay, so Wife Power and Dave, I should correct actually. They both have Barbie at 5. Dave made a last minute change when
All right.
we did the episode, and he has Barbie at 5. So, I mean, it's not like that's not completely unrealistic in my mind. I do think it's going to end up doing better than Oppenheimer, unfortunately. For you and I, though, The Flash is our biggest disappointment, and they have Flash both sitting at number 6, and they could end up nailing that spot.
That'd be
So,
rough.
yeah, so it's interesting how we initially thought because of Wife Power's Indiana Jones pick that she was done, but she's actually doing a lot better than we are.
Okay.
And it could end up being another disaster with Dave at the helm here, picking what movie
Uh-oh.
we end up watching.
Yes, the one thing we all, except Dave, don't want is we don't want Dave to win because if you listen to the episode, you know that what we have on the line, the wager, the part of the is that the winner gets to make the rest of the podcast hosts watch any movie,
That's
and
right.
then we review it on the show. And Dave has won 2 times before and chooses to torture his friends when he wins and makes us watch
Yeah.
terrible, terrible
And the
movies.
last thing I want to point out looking at our list is I already mentioned my biggest disappointment being Spider-Man Across Spider-Verse because I really put it at six thinking I want it to be great, but I didn't think it was going to make that
Oh,
kind
you
of
had it at
money that it's
six,
made.
eh?
Well, I didn't think it was going to
Damn.
make the kind of money that it's made just looking at how much Into the Spider-Verse did and knowing that it's an animated movie, but it really, over that 5 year period, clearly garnered some popularity and made for
No,
impressive
it's doing
sequel.
crazy good. I
But
had a
the
feeling that it was going to.
that last thing that we were holding on to hope, I really think you've got a shot with your 10 spot. You know, if you nail it, you'll get 13 because Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem is your 10 spot. And that is not on everyone's list here.
No one
Some people
else,
have it
really.
as Dark Horse, but that's only 1 point. You could nail the 13 points if it squeaks in. And I really think it could because where some of the movies have been disappointments, this could be a breakout hit with sort of Seth Rogen at the helm. And it's supposed to be a really funny kids movie
Well,
and
the
everything
fact
like
that
that. So
Spider-Verse is doing so good is a really good sign for Turtles. Because I
that's
think by the
exactly
time
right.
Turtle comes out, Spider-Verse will be out of the theater and parents or people will be wanting to take them to something similar. And it's copying the animation style and it's sort of trying to do to TMNT what the first Spider-Verse movie did to Spider-Man. So I'm like so bullish on that right now. I really hope that
Yes.
it does great at the box office. And it looks like a good movie and I want to see it. So.
And Wife Power and Dave both have Oppenheimer in the 10 spot. The one that I'm holding out in the 10 spot, we already mentioned, was Meg 2,
Meg,
The
yeah, I
Trench.
forgot
So, I
about
mean, that is like kind of out of nowhere because no one else has it on the list. But if it does really well, then I could be the one laughing at the end of the summer. So, lots of cool things still yet to happen. Lots of movies still to come out in the summer. But, majority of have. And those ones that have been surprising have really kind of made some waves here on our list.
Yeah,
So,
so hey, it's anyone's game still, I'd say.
this
Although
is
Dave is
true.
winning, it's anyone's game right now. And Dave, we're coming for you. We're not going to let you win again.
No. Or else we'll end up watching some Spawn offshoot, like straight to DVD
Oh man,
garbage.
wouldn't put it past him. All
All right,
right,
so time for the main event.
yeah,
By
time
the
for the
end of this
main.
episode, we're gonna find out if one of us is a Skrull, perhaps.
Very few of us know about the wars fought in the shadows that have raged on this planet. This world is burning, and it was you who lit the match. Do you feel responsible? Jim, why haven't you called any of your special friends?
This is personal. An invasion is here, Rhodey.
And I need you in your war machine armor.
The most wanted man on the planet.
You don't know what they have planned for you.
Fury?
We're gonna be very careful now.
This war is one I have to fight.
Alone.
This is just the beginning.
Where are the Avengers?
You're in no shape for this fight that lies before us.
Old friend.
Well, Mom always said I was special.
But yeah, we're here to talk about Secret Invasion, the next Marvel Studios miniseries on Disney Plus. You know, we love to dive into all things Star Wars and Marvel, or at least MCU here back in my day. So from time to time, we'll throw some episode reviews up on the Patreon, but this time we're about halfway through the series. So we got to talk about Secret Invasion and how it's hitting. I know I kind of want to start off with you, Howard, just because I know
Yeah.
it sounded like you're a little disappointed, not just because of the AI controversy, which we've been talking about at the intro of the series, but the series as a whole.
Yeah, the AI controversy aside, which I wasn't a fan of, but I'll put that aside to, review the show on its own merit. I just think it was not, very tasteful or a bit tone deaf or not really the right time to be using that kind of art generating AI in a TV show, but
Right.
That's fine. But, you know, they did it and they're feeling the heat for it. So I think deservedly so. But the biggest, yeah. So the show, you know, usually we do this episode by episode. We're going to cover the first three. If you talked to me after the second episode, I would have been a lot more positive about it. So I'm just coming off watching the third episode. And I think that was probably the worst episode of the three.
I'd
And
say it's my least favorite of the three, yeah.
yeah, least favorite of these, but I don't think the show is terrible. My biggest hang up is that it's nothing like the comic book at all, but yet it's called Secret Invasion.
Right.
And you know that I'm originally a fan of the comics.
Yeah,
I
it was a
love
big
comic book
run for
movies.
you.
I
It
love
helped
comic book
launch
TV
your love
shows.
for collecting, right?
Yeah, it did after Civil War. And what I love most about watching comic book movies and television shows is watching how they adapt the books that I've read, right? So, you know, I feel sometimes, I told you this, sometimes I feel like I'm the only one in the world that watches all these the DC animated movies. DC's making these animated movies and they've been making them for years, and they're sort of adapting, you know, The Killing Joke or Flashpoint or Batman Hush. And I love, you know, I love nothing more than to read the book and then watch the movie and see how they adapted it. And so coming to Secret
And they're
Invasion,
doing a good job of actually adapting
they're doing a job. And
those
what they
stories,
do
right?
also is that they do like a somewhat faithful adaptation, but they throw one or two twists in so that if you read the comic, this is what DC tends to do. If you read the comic, it's not like you're just watching it and you know everything that's going to happen. They change up a few things, but they still basically hit the general beats of the story. It's still very similar. So when Secret Invasion was greenlit, all these things in my mind were running through my mind, like, oh man, this is going to be awesome. You know, I thought it was going to be similar to the comics where this is something they've been planting in the movies for years, and they've been secretly swapping out people for Skrulls. I thought it was going to have all of the heroes in it, just like in the comic books, and it was going to lead to this big event type TV show or movie where, you know, you have all the heroes, and you know, this, it's revealed in the comic book, it's Elektra. She gets killed, and she's a Skrull, and you kind of learn that the Skrulls are playing an invasion of Earth, and they've been systematically replacing people and heroes for years. And I thought we were going to get that, and there's this real like anxiety to the book where you don't know who's a Skrull and who's not, and you know, all many heroes end up being Skrulls, and there's many twists and turns and backstabs and all this. And so far, the show is just—I know it's playing in a different universe, it's playing in the MCU, not the comic universe, and it's a bit probably harder to do that, but so far, it's not giving me any of that so
That's
far.
interesting you say, because maybe not as far as this episode, because I think by the time we hit this episode, we know a lot of what a lot of the key players are up to. But I think throughout the first two, I was feeling that kind of uncertainty and anxiety as to who might be revealed to be a Skrull or who might be switching sides in the conflict and this and that. Like it did give me that suspense, that same sort of spy thriller tone that I've come to enjoy from movies such as Captain America: The Winter Soldier, even something like Black Widow or Civil War. I think it's definitely in that sort of mature vein of
It is. It's more violent. Like
like
that has
more
a lot more
adult, more
guns.
violent Marvel, which I like to see. It's like I do like stuff like She-Hulk, but not everything can be like fun and games and treated as a joke, right? So, I think it's an interesting tone that they're playing with. I like that we're back in this type of tone. There have been three episodes. We're halfway through the season, so I am feeling strong on it. I think through the first two episodes, I was really excited to see what happens. Third episode, like I said, least favorite of the three, but still very intrigued. I think this is one of those series. I'm not really analyzing it the way I would compare it to the comic run, the same way you are. So I'm just more so looking at it as how it impacts the MCU that we know and love. So I think this is the type of show that by the end of the six episodes, I'll be able to judge it more clearly. Right now, I'm just kind of along for the ride and I've been enjoying it so far. But that's kind of where I'm at. And I think we should just,
I almost
yeah.
wish they didn't call it Secret Invasion, because by calling
Right.
it Secret Invasion, you know, they're inviting that comparison. It's like
Yes.
they're making Daredevil Reborn, right? And imagine if they make Daredevil Reborn and you read the
Or is
comic,
it Born Again?
or sorry, Born Again. You read the comic Daredevil Born Again, and then you go to watch the show, and it's nothing like the comic. Like that's what I'm feeling. Like we're gonna expect Daredevil Born Again to take a
Yeah.
lot of the source material and adapt it. That's what I expected when I saw a show called Secret Invasion, was to adapt it,
Yeah.
is adapt a lot of what the comic book is. And then it's, I can't, other than it being Skrulls and I guess them wanting to take over the world, I'm not seeing any other similarities, any other story beats they're hitting. Even the characters that they're using are totally different. It's like I'm not feeling anything the same, and that's the part that bums me out. Now that the show, so that I'll put a bow on that. That's my biggest critique, I guess,
Yeah, no.
which might be unique to me. It might be a problem me as someone who enjoys consuming the comic books, movies, and shows this way.
Right.
But as a show, it's like putting that aside, I agree with you that one of my favorite Marvel movies is Winter Soldier, and I do love the spy thriller tone when Marvel does that. And the thing we love about Marvel is that they can have different tones. They can have a comedy like She-Hulk, they got their spy thriller, they can have their sci-fi thing with Loki, they got the spy thriller with Secret Invasion. So the spy thriller genre of the MCU is the one that I do like when they get back into too. So that's cool. It's great to see Samuel Jackson back, and it's great to see Talos back. And they're really
Yes.
good actors. So you're seeing great. And Olivia Coleman's here.
I think that's the
Really, really good
strongest part of the
actors.
series for me is just the actual acting chops of the main characters and the fact that we get serious dialogue, real conversations between these characters where they're, I don't know, it's not moving at a fast pace that you would come to expect from a Marvel project. For me, it's moving sort of in this slow burn type of way. I would say similar to Andor, not that they're the same caliber or anything like that. Like they're
No,
both
yeah.
very well written shows and they're both very kind of different from what we've come to expect from these franchises. But at the same time, I'm just like I'm going for more of the tone there that's comparing it to Andor rather than the content itself. This is very much like a contained miniseries that I think is going to be wrapped up by the end of the sixth episode. And I'm just hoping that because at the end of each episode, there has been a drastic change. I wasn't a huge fan of what happened at the end of the third one, but there has been like this sort of, we mentioned when we were talking about the Hawkeye series, like there's like a change in status quo at the end of every episode. And you're kind of like, it gives you a bit of a cliffhanger each time. So I'm interested to see, are they saving the best for last? Are we going to get this crazy finale in episode six, which really shakes things up? Or is it going to return to the status quo of the MCU and really be like a non-event? That's really my biggest fear is that like nothing of consequence happens. But let's get into some of the details. We don't have to go beat by beat as we normally do, but what I do want to do is tackle each episode because I think, like I said, at the end of each episode, something major does happen. So let's sort of cover that. So I'll briefly go over what happens in episode one. We're dealing with Moscow. We're reintroduced to the return of Nick Fury from his Saber spaceship. He's reconnecting with Maria Hill and Talos, and we know Talos from Captain Marvel, and he's Ben Mendelsohn playing this Skrull general that basically allied with Nick Fury back in '95, and now we're back in the present day, or the MCU's present day, anyways, and we're starting to question like what have these Skrulls been up to, and how big is this threat that is seeming to be hitting Earth? And we get that opening sequence where we think it's Everett Ross, turns out to be a Skrull. He's talking to another agent. The agent's very paranoid, knows that there's a Skrull attack being planned and that they're being coordinated all across the globe as this kind of secret invasion thing that they're alluding to. So then Ross is not revealed to not be Ross, but to be a Skrull. He gets put down by Talos. Maria Hill questions him. Talos says, it's he's not one of us, he's one of them. So it's revealed that there is a rebel faction of Skrulls on Earth. Throughout the series, we find out there's actually a lot of Skrulls on Earth, but there's about 100 on Gravik's team, which is basically the antagonist, the villain of this series. And he is I quite like the actor playing him, and he's kind of a menacing presence. And then he's teaming up with Emilia Clarke's character, Gaia, who turns out is Talos's daughter. So, how did you feel about this first episode? How they set up the conflict, how they set up the key players? There's also Olivia Colman's character, who's MI6, leader of an MI6, who has a sort of a sordid history with Nick Fury. So, what did you think about this show that's centered around Nick Fury, but is picking up off the threads of the sort of the Skrull storyline that was laid down in Captain Marvel and how they're presenting it now as a
Yeah,
looming threat.
the one thing that I really enjoyed about Captain Marvel was, they took so the Skrulls are known to be bad guys, right? Obviously, if you read the comics. And so they played with that in Captain Marvel, and they took the Skrulls, who are these like ugly green reptilian creatures, you know, that's what your typical bad guy might look like. And they played with that trope and they actually set them up to be the bad guy and then put threw that on its head and made them actually the victims or the good guys in the movie. And the good looking like Kree were the bad guys. And
Right,
I
Jude
really, really,
Law.
yeah, I really, really like loved that twist from Captain Marvel. And so then to jump in the next time you see the Skrulls to have them being like the villains is kind of like, okay, yeah, now they're back to being the villains. That's
Well,
the Skrulls. But, and it's still like 100 of them, but then he very quickly it becomes like he becomes the
yes.
leader of all of them. So it's kind of like, well,
You're
now the
not wrong. I
Skrulls.
was going to mention that, yeah, it like starts out to be this, they call it New Skrullos, and it's basically
Yeah.
Gravik and Gaia and all these
So the
rebel
Skrulls are just villains
Skrulls
again, and that
amassing
thing
an
that I
army. Yeah.
love from Captain Marvel with it flipped on his hand is now sort of not, is sort of undone. So that bums me out a little bit. The episode itself, you know, when Ross was revealed to be a Skrull, that's what I'm talking
Yeah.
about with the comic book. It's like when someone was revealed to be a Skrull, you know, you were like, oh man,
It
when did
was a
that
big
happen? It
deal.
was a big deal. You
Yeah.
could go back and in some Brian Michael Bendis, the writer, was planting the seeds for like years. Whereas like
Yeah.
Ross being a Skrull, I don't think it was a big deal. I don't think we're meant to think he was a Skrull in the Black Panther movies. I think
Exactly. It
he
was
just
sort of
replaced.
soft, right? And it
Yeah, it
happened
was
really fast.
yeah, it was just like, hey, let's use this actor. What actor can we get to use to come in and be a Skrull? So I don't know. I wasn't. I liked Fury being back, and I like. I don't. I don't. I like the whole plan that Gravik has, his sort of faction, and he's sort of doing this plan in it to like get.
He
It's
basically wants
very.
the human expedite the humans to war
It's
with each other.
Ozymandias. It's very
Yeah.
Watchmen-esque. It's trying to force this conflict between the humans to destroy each other. Now, Ozymandias and Watchmen is doing
Yeah.
it because he thinks it's the only way the humans will ever work together to get them to like
Yeah,
go to
in
war.
ways
So
it's timely. It's
it's
got they're
yeah,
pitting
it's
America against
versus
Russia,
Russia.
and
Yeah,
it's, you know,
so
so.
that part is probably the best. And it's interesting because you spend so much time with him and the Skrulls, which you don't in the comic. You don't spend time with like following the bad guys and seeing their plan, right? You're mostly with the good guys. So
Right.
that's another interesting twist. But that's probably yeah the strongest part of the show. And then I liked how the episode ends almost
Yeah,
that
that was
Empire
pretty
Strikes
wild.
Back style of like the heroes don't win at the end of the episode, right? It's like
Yeah.
the bad guys that win in the episode. So yeah,
And you don't
pretty.
really know what's happening with Gaia because she keeps flipping sides, and she's like Gravik's one of Gravik's right-hand men, and then
Yeah, so
but she's Talos's daughter. And so it's
yes,
like,
that's an
you know,
interesting twist that you learn.
she's going over to the other side and feeding them information, and then she's saying, well, I'm going to paint the bags with infrared. But it's almost like you're meant to believe she's double-crossing her own father. Yet it's really, in reality, when you're sort of halfway through the season by now, you're noticing that Gravik just is very hyper aware of his lieutenants and what they're up to, and he's one step ahead of her. And so she's trying to help Talos and the side of basically the Skrulls who don't want war, essentially, that are tired of war because they've been in constant war with the Kree and they don't want another war with the humans, and they want peaceful, they want to live peacefully among the humans. So that was interesting. And then, of course, like you mentioned, that ending where it's like Maria Hill. I really liked this, even though it's sad to see her character go. It seems like she is now being killed off by Gravik himself, and he was taking the form of Nick Fury when it happened. Now, throughout the episode, she was very wary of Nick Fury's return to Earth because she's
Yeah,
saying, you're kind
trying
of
to catch
out of
early.
your past your prime, and you used to be 3 steps ahead. Now you're just trying to catch up. And she warned him essentially that she was going to get her killed. And that's exactly what happened. So I do enjoy the part of the series that I enjoy is it does seem that there are stakes to it. And it does seem like they're willing to stick the landing with some of these choices. So I'm hoping that by the end of the series that they do stick the landing and they don't walk it back on some of these choices. But they did make a bold choice to kill off a legacy character in Maria Hill. And then, you know, we head on into the second episode. But I thought it was a good ending. I also
Yeah,
really
did
enjoyed
you
this.
like Maria Hill being killed off? Because she's such a cool character in the comics, and I don't think it's the show's fault. I think her death could have been very impactful and very meaningful if she was just given other things to do leading up to this show. But she really
Agreed.
hasn't been
She hasn't been around, yeah.
given any chance to shine. So it's not this show's fault. That's just a failing of like the MCU over the past many years not
Yeah.
using Maria Hill enough and not using her in a cool way or way that does the character justice and gives the actress something to do. So the death was kind of like she doesn't feel like a super main character. She does
Yeah.
unfortunately feel sort of disposable. So if you're a
I
comic
agree with
fan,
that.
you know it's a you know it's a good you know that she's a big character. So her death was shocking to me, and I was like, no, they didn't just kill Miranda Hill. I always thought they had more in store for her, right?
Right.
So to me, it did come as a big shock, and it did lead it did raise the stakes for me, like you said, like, okay, this show's playing for keeps.
Yeah, and I agree that like, it was unexpected, but like I said, I just think that the writing in the show is very good, where when I go back and I watch this now, I'm looking at her interacting with Nick Fury and I'm seeing like he's getting schooled and like he's having a major sort of character arc in this series so far. And again, we have to see where it ends up, but essentially each time something major happens in the series, it's affecting Nick Fury in a big way. So especially losing his, I would say that was his go-to contact on Earth,
Yeah, for sure.
next to Talos maybe. But like, we had that twist at the end of Far From Home where it was like Nick Fury and Maria Hill were actually Talos and Talos's wife. So it's like those characters have been obviously very close all throughout the 90s and doing missions and stuff like that. So interesting way to kick it off. I thought it was a very strong opening. And then of course episode two was also equally as strong. I thought a lot of interesting things were happening with some of the characters. We didn't mention that Rhodey is also part of this series. He's War Machine. Like War Machine is representing like sort of America's take or the government's take on what's going on and how they're reacting to Nick Fury and the events that happened in Moscow, the three explosions that went off. They're kind of putting Nick Fury in the middle of it and kind of blaming him for his involvement and making maybe matters worse as opposed to having them involved. But of course, we know Nick Fury doesn't trust anybody. He's going it alone. There's a really interesting scene in episode two between Rhodes and Fury. But let me just sort of
At the
recap
end of the
episode two.
episode,
We
right?
can dive into it. Yeah. So basically, we're seeing a flashback in episode two where we see the sort of origin of Gravik. We see that Fury was recruiting Skrulls alongside Talos and recruit Gravik as a young age. Meets this female Skrull that was helping maybe adopt Gravik. I'm not sure, but like there was some interesting Skrull characters introduced in that flashback. And then we got that interesting train ride between Talos and Nick Fury, right? So Fury starts to call Talos out and try and get more information out of him as to what's really going on in the secret invasion on Earth. We find out that there's like a million Skrulls on Earth, whereas Fury this whole time thought Talos had like, a couple dozen, found Skrulls along the way maybe, but like didn't know how massive it actually was. So Talos put out the call, and now there's a million Skrulls living among us on Earth. So the secret invasion has already happened. Now it's just a matter of can they sort of navigate this and save humanity, because the wrong, like Gravik's people want basically the annihilation of the human species.
Yeah, so
So
a million Skrulls have been living on Earth peacefully, right? What is the reason why Gravik is so hell-bent on killing all the humans? If all the Skrulls have been living peacefully on Earth just with humans, like they've basically got what they wanted. That's what I wasn't picking up. It's not like
Yeah.
they were hunting Skrulls and killing
So
them, right?
how they call the base New Skrullos, and basically when they recruit their warriors, they say, who are your warrior and what do you want? I want home in my own skin. So basically he's seeing having to live amongst the man as like a form of oppression, right? So the way I looked at it from the second episode perspective is this is Fury. He's always trying to defend Earth. He made these promises, and now this is like, sins of the past. Like he made promises to these Skrulls that him and
He
Captain
would
Marvel
find
were going
them
to
another
find
Earth
a new
or another
planet
planet, yeah.
for them to live the way they want to live, right? Like freedom, basically. So they made those promises, and then they said, okay, in the meantime, help us out, and then we got your back. We're going to find you a new planet. We know over the course of the MCU, all the craziness that went down with Infinity War and Endgame, they obviously had like some bigger fish to fry and kind of put that on the back burner. So that's a long
Gotcha.
time to wait. Even though Skrulls live longer than humans, it's still a long time to kind of wait around. So when you got like a young, ambitious, like because Gravik was young
So
when
he's
Fury met
pissed,
him,
so
so.
pissed at Nick Fury that he's going to be willing to wipe out all the human race, right?
Well,
To make
he
the
just.
planet, the Skrull planet that Nick
This is
Fury
a
was supposed
guy
to
that
find him.
sees Skrulls as superior to humans, and right now they're living kind of in shadows of humans. So they're kind of living as lesser beings. right? So he kind of makes some comparisons to dogs at one point, and he says he actually likes dogs, but he probably sees Skrulls as being treated like the dogs in the human dog relationship kind of thing. So it was an interesting episode. I really liked Olivia Colman kind of stepping it up, and she was torturing a Skrull for information. I thought that was cool. I had the surprise ending in episode two where Fury kind of gets out of hot water there. Oh yeah, we've got to talk about the conversation between him and Rhodes, but then he basically comes home and we find out he's coming home after being away for all these years, but he's been married to a
To a
Skrull,
scroll.
it seems,
Yeah,
as well.
that was
That was an interesting cliffhanger as well. It kind of like it takes a moment to adjust to that, and then you kind of like they play with that a little bit more in episode three. But let's talk about Rhodes for a second, because regardless of how you feel about the series, we were making some predictions, some pretty heavy predictions heading into this series. And I said at one point on one of these episodes, or maybe it was one of our live talks on Twitter, but it was basically me speculating that in order to get a show like Secret Invasion to stick the landing, you're going to have to reveal some of the main characters as Skrulls. And I'm not talking about something like bait and switch, like Ross being revealed to being a Skrull, but it's probably not the Ross that we saw in Black Panther, or you know what I mean? So it's got to be more of a, hey, we introduced Skrulls in 95. Skrulls have been on Earth since 95, so let's go and take an actual legacy character and make them having been a Skrull that entire time, the entire time we've known them in the MCU. That's a big swing, but I think it's something that would make the gravity of Secret Invasion feel earned. And it's a tightrope, because you can't do someone like Tony Stark or, you know, Steve Rogers. You can't retcon that much in the Infinity Saga. That will piss people off. But you do have to choose a character that's not like Ms. Marvel or someone like brand new. Like, you kind of gotta play that
Yeah,
game
it
and
makes
choose a
sense.
legacy character. So my pick going into this, I had to think of who I would pick to be a legacy character that would be revealed to have been a Skrull this entire time. And it's a bit of a tightrope. You know, you can't go too serious. You can't take one of the major players like the original six Avengers, but you can't take, you know, an obscure character like Everett Ross as an example. Can't be the big reveal, right? So my pick going into this series was actually Colonel James Rhodes himself, War Machine, because I thought, okay, well, he's a bit of a main character, but he'd be a forgettable sort of, not forgettable. Don Cheadle has a great performance. Terrence Howard as well debuted as a character, but not to say forgettable, but you could get away with doing it, in my opinion. So that's my pick for who they're going to make a Skrull. And then, of course, I also mentioned Sharon Carter, because I just don't believe her actions in Falcon the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, we talked about that.
But yeah, so it's an interesting scene, right, in episode two, where basically Rhodes is giving Nick Fury shit about the whole situation in Moscow, the fact that he got Maria Hill killed, and he's acting, I'm not say out of character. He's definitely always been aligned with the government, but you know, we know him to be a hero that would want to save the world first and at least maybe inquire as to what's going on with the Skrulls. But he's just kind of writing Nick Fury off at this point. So how do you feel about my prediction, and what were your thoughts about the conflict between Rhodes and Fury
Well,
in
I'm
episode two?
seeing that prediction everywhere now, and you had that in my head going into the show, but you were like super early on this prediction. So if it ends up being true, you were way ahead of anyone out there calling it now for three episodes. And yeah, because you said that, I was really picking up on the little things in the conversation and how
Yeah, did you catch what he said?
we were making Rhodey to be more of like a dick than I remember. And I think what you said about replacing people, that's exactly what I want to go to us think back and be like, oh, they replaced him. No, I don't think it has to be for the whole MCU, but at some point in time, you know, when his attitude may have changed, and then you can go back and rewatch movies and kind of figure, oh, that's when he got switched out, right? Between this movie and that movie, and that's why he's acting all different. And there has to be like a few characters like that, hopefully. Sharon Carter would be another good one, because like that would be
It would
satisfying,
justify a
because
little bit as to
she
why
had a
she was
whole
going against this
yeah she had a
outlook.
whole series where you've seen her, and then it recontextualizes that. That's what I want from this
Well,
show. I want
yeah, and
them to
like when she's being on the Farius and she's on the phone and stuff, if it turns out that that's a Skrull, it's
yeah
like
that
that
it now
actually
makes
turns
sense.
into a cool moment, right?
So
Like,
I want them to blow my mind with someone that we're not predicting. I mean, if they do it with Rhodey, I'll give them credit, because that's a really big character, and I think that will deliver on what we're saying. So Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great prediction, and I at this point, I think you're
I
right,
think
but
there's
we'll
weight
see.
to it. I do,
Yeah.
and I'm not just trying to throw my biased opinion out there because I want to
Oh,
be
there's
right,
weight. Yeah.
but also because he literally says, if you go back and watch episode two, I think he's planting some hints here. The dialogue is very carefully chosen. I think the writing, like I said, is strong in general, but he actually specifically calls out his introduction to the Skrulls was 15 years ago, and I did the math. When you look at where the MCU is in the timeline, it puts him back in Iron Man Day.
Oh, okay.
So he found out about the Skrulls ever since the
Ever
very first
since
movie
the
in the
first Iron
MCU.
Man. Oh,
So
geez. Okay.
they are throwing a big possibility that there's gonna be a retcon here, that he's been in a Skrull the entire time.
Jeez. Imagine if they switched him between the first and second Iron Man, and that's why he
So
looks
that, like, when he
different.
became Don Cheadle, he's the Skrull. That'd be amazing. I thought about that too. So there it is. I think that there will be some surprises. We're halfway through the show. Like we both mentioned, the third episode wasn't our favorite of the three. But I will say there were some interesting things even in that one. Like, we have this reinforcement of, we haven't even touched on the guy who plays Gravik, because he's pretty good. His name is, what is it here? Sorry.
I've seen
It
him in some other
was,
things. It's
yeah,
Kingsley Ben-Adir.
Ben-Adir, right? Yeah,
Ben-Adir.
Kingsley Ben-Adir. Okay, gotta shout his name out, because he's doing some really great stuff here. And in addition to sort of playing the titular villain, or the main villain of the series, he's teasing this idea that I think they set up in the trailers, and they set up, and we know from the comics to be slightly different, but they're talking Super Skrulls. He actually mentions it in the third episode.
Which that was the best part of the third episode
Yeah.
was the mention of Super Skrull.
So he's building this machine, because it actually makes sense to me that, we've seen Skrulls, we've seen them change into humans. Wouldn't it be cool to see what they could do with other species throughout the MCU? So we actually saw in episode two, Gaia was looking into Gravik's computer files, and the scientists that are helping him build this machine, they were looking up different genetics, different DNA from different species. We got mentions of Groot, Frost Giants, Cull Obsidian from Thanos' Black Order, and
It went by so fast, but I saw Groot, I saw Cull Obsidian, I didn't see anyone else, but yeah,
yeah, the
that
Frost
was
Giants were
cool.
in there. Oh, and the sorry, an Extremis from Iron Man 3. So basically, the healing sort of magma-like power that Aldrich Killian had and his henchmen had in Iron Man 3, this ability to heal, he actually shows it off in episode 3. So we know that he's already tested
Oh
the machine on himself.
yeah, that's what that was. Okay, good call.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on
So
that.
at one point in episode 3, Talos stabs him in the hand, Gravik, and then
That was the
he just
Extremis.
rips the knife
Okay.
out of his hand, and Talos is already gone at this point. He heals up with the Extremis
That's
power.
what he did. Oh
So
my God. Because,
we know that he's already, yeah.
Super Skrull. Okay, go on. We'll talk about
So
Super Skrull
I was
later.
going to say, so we know that it's a thing in the comics. We know that it's they're portraying it a little differently here, but I like what they're doing, because they're picking up what the MCU has thrown down, as opposed to just trying to shoehorn in exactly what we know from the comics. So I'll let you explain it a little bit, but basically, the Super Skrull in the comics is a villain of the Fantastic Four. He's a Super Skrull that has been given the powers of all the Fantastic Four, so that he, in the hopes of being able to fight all four of them. So in this case, we don't yet have the Fantastic Four in the MCU, so they're kind of using the idea of a Super Skrull to say that yes, the technology is there, that they can give Skrulls more abilities by collecting DNA of other species. And we've seen here a little taste of that. The fact that he's looking at Groot, I know in the trailer it looked like we had a reference to Super Skrull, because we see him stretching out his arm. So I thought when we first saw that in the trailer that that was going to be the Super Skrull with the Fantastic Four abilities. But it looks more like now thinking back on it, that it's probably a Groot
Yeah,
ability.
that's a good call.
And so we've got Extremis, Groot, possible Frost Giant activity, and then whatever Call Obsidian brings to the table. So that's four different abilities that we're going to see Gravik have
You're already
being in
onto
the
it.
MCU version of Super Skrull.
Because I was wondering how they were going to do the Super Skrull before they've done the Fantastic Four. That to me is very, very odd. But I guess they've done
Yeah,
the whole secret invasion.
actually, you just nailed it when you said it, because I just had a light bulb moment. I mean, basically, we're looking at Extremis being the replacement for Human Torch.
Human Torch,
We've
yeah.
got Cull Obsidian to be the replacement for the Thing, Groot be replacement for Mr. Fantastic. So that leaves the Frost Giant. I guess you could maybe make like an ice shield and
No, I think
consider that
the
invisibility.
Frost Giant would be the Thing and Strength, and Call Obsidian would be the Invisible Woman, because he can.
Obsidian.
Is that? Oh no, that's Ebony Maw. Call Obsidian is the big guy.
He's like the dwarf guy. I don't know what he's used
Oh,
to.
okay.
So I was thinking maybe he'd be like the Thing because he's strong, but I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. We'll see. But yeah, they're gonna somewhat
And
mimic
like
the
Invisible
form.
Woman does a lot of shields, so you could do like ice shields with Russia. I don't know.
Yeah.
But basically they're kind of
Yeah.
finding MC
Mimicking.
replacements for all these
Which
abilities.
that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah, and the whole like in Secret Invasion, the comic book, when heroes are plucked off and replaced by Skrulls, it wasn't just like any Skrull could be a superhero. Like Spider-Woman was sort of the big one who ended up being the Skrull queen and everything. And it wasn't just like any Skrull could be Spider-Woman. Like they had to make a Skrull, get Spider-Woman's DNA, and like genetically enhance the Skrull to like be the powers of Spider-Woman. Like that's and that's same with Super Skrulls. Like they genetically enhance them with this DNA of the. So that's very there. I'm getting some of the sort of comic book stuff that I was looking for in the sort of DNA altering side. But yeah, those four that you meant, like the four that we were just talking about, are not the traditional Super Skrull powers. But I like that if they're gonna introduce Super Skrull before Fantastic Four, I kind of like that they're gonna go down, find similar power sets so that he can be the Super Skrull that we know and have the stretchy arms and be on fire and be strong. So that's what I want to see. That's cool. But yeah, so Gravik is turning to the Super Skrull, which is
Yeah, so
interesting.
and he actually already coined it in like he literally mentioned Super Skrulls as like kind of his idea is he's gonna win the war against the humans by being able to fight. If they bring in the Avengers, he'll have an army of people with these powers. So obviously we know he's tested on himself, and maybe he won't get a chance to give other people powers, and he'll just have to deal with having all those power sets himself. But it's a good setup for a character, definitely for a villain of this series. And I really see that dynamic between him and Fury, and also him and Talos. Talos has been an interesting one as well for me because he does seem committed to Fury, even though he lied to him. So there's a little bit of a back and forth there. And my hope is that we maintain the integrity of Talos being a good guy, at least. So there are some good Skrulls out there, and that it's really just Gravik's current contingent that are clearly the villains. But we had that escalated attack that was thwarted in episode three, and it was like basically Fury and Talos trying to stop the airplane attack, right? So they ended up stopping that, but then the ultimate surprise ending to this one was the fact that Gaia got shot. So that was interesting. Emilia Clarke
Yeah,
is
that
seemingly dead.
was.
So Talos's daughter is seemingly dead, and he doesn't even know. So it's a pretty
There's no
wild
way they're
way to
gonna
end
bring
that
an
episode.
actress that big and kill her off. Like,
I think
Horace has really
that's
done anything, right? That
yeah,
was shocking.
that was shocking. And everything with Fury and his wife, I don't know how to feel about that right now, but it just doesn't seem like we know what her allegiance is. Is she gonna be loyal to Fury in the end, and she's just kind of
You know, it
playing
was
a
crazy
game,
after the
or is
second
she
episode.
really flipped?
I thought, oh, that's where he's been. Like he's been his happily ever after
As
living with his
opposed to being in
wife, and that
space?
and what he with her in space, you
Okay,
know,
okay.
because they didn't explain that she was on Earth and all that, and he's in
They
space.
also leave you the
So
cliffhanger as to whether or not he knows, right? That she's a Skrull because she changes.
that's right. I thought, he fell in love with a Skrull, and that's why he didn't want them back down to Earth, and he was living with her. And then that totally, like, if we were talking after the second season, that's what I would have been saying. Like, oh, he's been living. That's why I didn't. That explains, because that to me is still a mystery. Like, what he was doing, why he didn't want to come back to Earth, why he was so MIA after the blip. And I thought that would have filled that gap. Like, he fell in love and he was having his happy ending. And then this is what called him back. And I thought she kind of came down with him. But it turns out that, he left during the blip and she was
Yeah, she
alone, which
called him
wasn't his
out for
fault,
it.
but then he left her again when he came
Yeah,
back.
she called him out for it. She
So
says, you always leave. It's not the fact, it's the fact that you didn't come back. So it's like she's kind of bitter, and now we see her working with Gravik.
and that also
So
adds more to the mystery of why did he leave up the spaceship, because he also had this wife that he left, right? So now
yeah.
they really need to explain what was he doing all that time that he was
Yep,
away.
for sure.
They've set that
So
up even more as a mystery.
there are definitely some interesting threads here that they're gonna touch on. I feel like it did kinda it didn't go as big or as hard as first two episodes in the third, but it is probably setting up for what they're trying to do in the back half of the season. So interested to see. And the whole War Machine thing, I just think like honestly,
That
You
guy
know.
that called her at the end, though, you said it was graphic. That sounded like Don Cheadle to me. That sounded like War Machine to me. That called for his
So
wife.
I was thinking about it too, and I was thinking like, okay, I do hope I'm right that they make him a Skrull, but wouldn't it be cool if the twist is like, okay, maybe you saw it coming that he was a Skrull, but you think he's bad and he's a Skrull that's gonna help out or something like that. Like maybe he's allied with Talos, not Gravik, or something like that, right? So we don't know what Fury's wife is necessarily up to, but it does seem like they're making her out to seem like a like she's already switched sides. And
So
then
that was
I'm hope
Gravik that called her, because I thought I heard Don Cheadle. I thought that was War Machine that called her at the end.
unless like someone else called her, but they were talking about Gravik, so they're kind of involved in the whole thing.
Yeah,
Because
we'll wait to see how that plays
now,
out.
we didn't really mention it, but Gravik has involved the entire secret council of the Skrulls. So like each kind of high end member that of Skrull infiltration on Earth that weren't originally necessarily evil Skrulls have they've all kind of sworn allegiance to Gravik now. So his army has gotten that much bigger.
Yeah,
And
he's
his
now
plans
all of
are
the
really
scrolls
about to
now.
pop off.
He
So
now has like a million scrolls under his power.
where the assembling of the Avengers is noted in the comics as Fury's big week, this is like Fury's week from hell. This is like Fury's last week almost. Like, you know what I mean? Like, never mind the fact that we know that we're going to see Samuel L. Jackson pop up in the Marvels, but at least for right now, we don't know what the fate of like Nick Fury is on Earth and like how that's going to play going forward. So it's going to be interesting to see how they wrap it up in these final three episodes.
Yeah, I think that's why I like talking to you about this stuff, Ian, because I'm definitely more excited now than I was going into this. I think there is more to chew on now that we've talked about it than I probably thought there was when I was watching it myself. And the third episode, I think the stuff with Gravik and with Emilia Clarke and with the wife was all interesting. It was like the whole stopping of the plane was kind of a meh. That plot was kind of meh, but. Wife Power had a funny comment because she's like really not enjoying the show, and she said it's just two middle-aged guys bickering like a married couple. That's
Oh
basically
man,
her
that's hilarious.
synopsis, her description of the entire show. So she, I don't
Yeah.
think she'll be coming on anytime soon to talk about this show. I don't know if she's even gonna
No,
finish
fair
it,
enough, but
but
it's funny you say that because I kind of see that as a positive, like low key a positive for this series, because I do think that some of the stuff that's keeping me gripped or keeping me invested is just seeing honestly Ben Mendelsohn and Samuel L. Jackson kind of go back and forth, and then you got other big actors like Emilia Clarke and Olivia Colman, and they're all just kind of doing like what they do best. But those conversations, the fact that they're very close, but they've also had this separation because Fury's been in space for however long. It's just this dynamic of like, yeah, we're boys, but like, I don't really trust anyone at the end of the day. So like, who can you trust really? And that question is pervasive throughout the series. It's keeping me interested for sure.
All right. So there you have it. That's our thoughts on the first three episodes of Secret Invasion. We'll try to have some more reviews for everyone, hopefully on the Patreon. If not, we'll definitely come back to the main feed and wrap up the series finale. Hopefully Dave will join us. Maybe Wife Power will join us if the thoughts turn around, or maybe we can have a special guest on for that episode. That could be fun. In the meantime, go back, listen to our previous episode where Ian reviewed Indiana Jones, and then I joined and me and Ian reviewed Guardians of the Galaxy 3. So more MCU talk on that episode. And there's more Turtles talk coming up in the future. We're still reviewing the Turtles movies. I know it's been a few weeks. The next one we have to review is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, Turtles in Time. And we do plan on getting to all of the theatrical Ninja Turtles movies,
Yes.
including the two
And
Michael
I'm
Bay
trying to convince
ones.
Power and Ruthless to watch Rise of the Teenage Mutant
And yeah, we want to get in some of
Ninja
the animated ones. It's just how much
Turtles.
time do we have? Can we get into it all before the Mutant Mayhem comes out? So this is all building up to Mutant Mayhem, the new Ninja
Baxter
Turtles
Stockman,
movies. Yeah, in August.
Superfly.
So we've reviewed the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1 and 2 already. So check those episodes out just a few episodes ago if you haven't. And yeah, so Turtles in Time should be, if not our next episode, then the one after that. So stay tuned for that for more Turtles talk. So thanks for listening, everyone. Ian, thanks for joining me. Thanks for getting me
Yeah.
more hyped about Secret Invasion.
So who's the Skrull power? Me or you?
Yeah, definitely
Or
me.
is it Dave hiding
I'm
out
the
on New
evil one.
Skrullos?
Yeah. Dave's Nick Fury because he's the leader, but he's hiding out, not showing up.
That's right.
I'm the Skrull because I'm the evil one who hates Marvel apparently, and Dave and
So
Wife Power. What's she? I don't know.
that
She's
means you really do have the power because you got all four of those abilities.
exactly. I'm
So
the
yeah,
Super Skrull. All
that's
right.
right.
So if you want to hear catch us talking about Turtles, talking about Secret Invasion, you can follow along on social media. At Day Back In is our handle. We're on Twitter and Instagram for now, and hopefully more sites like Threads as all kids are on these days, and possibly Blue Sky. We'll see if we get an invite up over there. But for now, just at Day Back In is the handle. Search us up on social media. And the podcast is called Back in My Day. We have a Patreon, back in my patreon.com/backinmyday, where we drop extra episodes, extra content for our followers. And if you can't subscribe to the Patreon but want to help out the show, you can always leave a review on Apple iTunes or your podcast app of choice and subscribe and rate the podcast. That all helps. So until next time, thanks everyone for listening, and catch you next time with some Turtles talk.
Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Power, I think you nailed it. I think absolutely that was Don Cheadle's voice at the end of episode 3, which means James Rhodes is Skrull, baby.